This is the Commodity Culture Podcast, where we interview prominent investors, fund managers, analysts, and company CEOs to give you an edge when it comes to investing in the commodity space. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Commodity Culture, where our goal is to make you a better investor in the commodity space. My name is Jesse Day. Before we dive in, standard disclaimer, nothing here is investment advice. Do your own due diligence. And today's guest is the chief economist and global strategist at Euro-Pacific Asset Management and the host of the Peter Schiff Show. We're going to be talking about precious metals, the economy, the Fed, and more. It's Peter Schiff. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jesse, thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, happy to have you on again. Always enjoy talking to you, and the audience loves hearing your thoughts. So let's start with the great performance put in by gold and silver so far this year. In your view, what are the main catalysts that brought us here? And is this a precious metals bull market that is still in its early stages?
Well, absolutely. I think we're just getting started. I think there's still a lot of fear and doubt in the market. Just look at the underperformance of the gold and silver mining equities. Traders are very skeptical of this rally. They didn't expect it. In fact, just a couple of months ago, Newmont Mining and Barrick Gold were basically downgraded to sells, the equivalent, you know, holes by Wall Street, because they saw no upside in the price of gold. And that's when gold was around 2,000. We're now around 2,400. 20% increase. That's pretty good upside. And, you know, it's still early in the year. And, you know, it's just that the traders still don't understand it. They think, well, the Fed is going to cut rates fewer times than we thought, or it's going to delay the rate cuts. And they think that's bearish for gold. But it's really not bearish, because it doesn't even matter if the Fed cuts rates at all. The Fed should be hiking rates, and they're not. And that's what's bullish for gold, because inflation is already headed back up. It never got down to 2%. Now it's headed back higher. I think we're going to take out the 9.1% peak from mid-2022. I mean, all the forward-looking indicators, commodity prices, not just gold and silver, but all commodities, are showing incredible strength, much more so than we saw in the previous year. And credit growth has continued unabated despite the Fed's rate hikes. Government is borrowing more. Private sector is borrowing more. Everybody is spending. Deficits are out of control. There's no sign of any fiscal restraint. It's the deficit spending that is the driving force behind the inflation. And the Fed monetization and the artificially low interest rates. And even though the Fed has hiked rates many times and we're back above 5%, that's still a low rate. It's still a stimulative rate. It's not a restrictive rate the way Powell and his cronies at the Fed claim. The Fed is still providing easy money to the economy. And of course, we have highly stimulative fiscal policy. So it's an inflationary cocktail, and gold understands this, or gold investors. And the big investors are the central banks, foreign central banks, particularly emerging market central banks, are major buyers of gold. That's going to continue. Investors haven't even really participated yet, but they will, probably at much higher prices.
You mentioned on your show recently as well that the mainstream media seems to be kind of asleep at the wheel when it comes to gold and silver rising as well. Why do you think it is that it's so dismissed? I mean, there were even some insane articles on CNBC saying you don't want to own gold because the only reason to own gold is if the world is in chaos, and people that own gold hope it doesn't go up, and all of these insane things. What is going on with the financial talking heads? Will there come a point where they wake up and they start talking about gold like it should be talked about, and that is as money?
Well, first of all, I think the strength in gold really flies in the face of the narrative of a soft landing, of a return to 2% inflation, of rate cuts coming. And so they don't really want to acknowledge that or question these beliefs, you know, or, you know, acknowledge the warning that gold is sounding on inflation, on fiscal policy, on monetary policy. But also, I think a lot of the financial media has been captured by the cryptos and the Bitcoin people, who are spending a lot of money advertising on all the financial networks and who flood the financial networks with their guests. And so I think they've really pushed gold to the back burner because as far as they're concerned, gold's irrelevant because now we have something better. We have Bitcoin, which they claim is digital gold. But it's not digital gold at all. I mean, it's no more digital gold than digital food is food. Gold has real properties in the real world that are vitally important to its value. You can't just replicate that, you know, digitally because you can't substitute Bitcoin for gold in any capacity in which gold is used. So it's not an alternative. So what is it? It's a token, but there's nothing unique about it. There's 20,000 other digital tokens that have been created. Sure, they have a different name, although some of the names are very similar to Bitcoin. The properties are very similar. I mean, there's tweaks here and there, but some are pretty much carbon copies of Bitcoin. Many have improved on some of the flaws of Bitcoin. But regardless, there's enough of them for everybody to buy them. I mean, they can keep creating new ones out of thin air. And so there's no reason for Bitcoin to be worth, $60,000+ or anywhere close to that, or even $10,000 or $5,000 or $1,000. I think it's all just a digital Ponzi, a pyramid. I mean, it's a blockchain letter is what it is. It's just a chain letter on a blockchain. And that's all that's new is that a classic fraud is being perpetrated using the internet and blockchain. So all they've done is dressed it up for the 21st century and repackaged it and presented it as if it was, you know, something new and legitimate, but it's just the latest iteration of fool's gold.
Well, let's talk about the dollar here, because you also mentioned you think the dollar is going to get weaker up ahead due to it being on the way to losing its reserve currency status and because of the phony economy that's being built on top of it. Where are we right now in the trend of de-dollarization? Because this is obviously something that's ongoing. We're seeing signs that obviously nations are starting to divest themselves of treasuries and the US dollar. As you mentioned, massive central bank gold accumulation, very much related, I think, to the US seizing Russian FX reserves and nations around the world kind of waking up and realizing, hey, we kind of need something that we need to keep our finances in our own country in a way that it can't be stolen from us by some political opponents. So I'm wondering where you think we are in the trend of de-dollarization and how you think gold will ultimately play a role. Will it start with the BRICS nations? Will other governments eventually start to use gold as a means to transact? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think we're still early in that process, although at some point it's going to rapidly accelerate. You know, the dollar is going to lose value slowly and then rapidly. But right now, it's still being propped up by its legacy position as the reserve currency, as a go-to safe haven in times of concern. We certainly have a lot of problems, geopolitical events happening around the world. And the idea that the Fed is going to be leaving rates higher for longer has been supportive of the dollar because the markets had been expecting cuts and they're not getting them. And so that is supportive of the dollar for now. But I do think ultimately the rise in gold is going to shine a big light on the dollar and its vulnerabilities. And as the inflation rate really begins to rise and the Fed does not react by hiking rates because it won't, because it really can't based on the fiscal box that everybody is in, which is a consequence of the Fed having kept rates so low for so long. They've got everybody hooked on this drug, and so they can't take it away. I mean, they should, but they won't because of the short-term ramifications. And, you know, we got an election coming up in November, so he's not going to pull the rug. Powell's not going to pull the rug out from under Biden. And so I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on the dollar to drop as real interest rates plunge, as inflation rises, but nominal rates stay the same. And in fact, if we start to see more evidence of weakness in the labor markets in a way that shows up in the statistics, that could put pressure on Powell to cut rates, even as inflation is accelerating, which would cause the dollar to fall through the floor and create an acceleration of the momentum to get out of the dollar and into gold.
And speaking of de-dollarization, Putin recently calling on countries in the Middle East to stop using the dollar for oil trade. He said, if oil producers in the Middle East stop using the US dollar, it will be the end of the dollar. How realistic do you think that development is? Obviously, a lot of the strength of the dollar comes from its use for transacting oil. Do you see that coming to an end anytime soon if the BRICS and their allies really come together? Is there a plan they could put in place to make that happen? And would it be as dire as Putin says, the end of the dollar at that point?
Well, whether they plan for it or not, it's going to happen. And it won't be the end of the dollar, you know, as a currency, but it will be the end of the dollar's role as the dominant currency in the world, as the reserve currency of the world. And that means it's the end of America's days of living beyond her means. You know, Americans have enjoyed that exorbitant privilege. It's enabled us as a people to run $1 trillion a year trade deficits, which means we get to consume $1 trillion a year worth of stuff that we didn't produce and we didn't really pay for. And so our lives are a lot better because we have all that stuff that we got for nothing. But when we can no longer just export the dollars we create out of thin air to import the products that other countries manufacture, expending significant resources in the process, land, labor, capital, when we can no longer do that, then Americans are going to have to get used to a much lower standard of living. I mean, that's just the reality. I mean, just, you know, imagine going into a Walmart and all the stuff isn't there. It's like, you know, you have Americans will have a lot of cash, but very little to buy. And what is available is going to be much more expensive. So we're going to have to get used to not buying things. And of course, a lot of the U.S. economy is built around selling stuff to Americans. And if Americans can't afford to buy, then that whole, you know, industry, all that retail and service sector just collapses. And it's going to be a rough road to transition back to a productive economy that is viable and sustainable on its own, that can exist without the privilege of the reserve currency of the dollar. Now, maybe we'll have some help from AI. Maybe that will make a return to real production, you know, easier in the U.S., you know, because, you know, we'll have robots maybe and stuff like that. But, you know, it's going to take a long time to train all these, you know, philosophers how to make stuff.
I want to talk about inflation here because we got hotter than expected CPI numbers recently. It looks like your call of more inflation up ahead has been correct. I mean, we know that the CPI numbers are massively doctored. It's an absolute joke. You mentioned recently you should double those numbers. I would agree with you there. At what point could rising inflation create civil unrest in the U.S. and other places? Because, you know, I was watching a documentary about the rampant retail theft happening in San Francisco now. People are literally just walking into stores and taking whatever they want. And there was actually interviews with the thieves, and they were saying it's because they just can't afford to live in the city, that the jobs won't pay them enough, et cetera. At what point does this all break and does civil unrest occur? Or are people just willing to take the pain and maybe pretend it's not happening?
Yeah, well, it is happening already. In fact, I just read an article that San Francisco is trying to crack down on the supermarkets that are trying to shut down because they're not profitable with all the theft. And so they're trying to force them to stay in business. But the cost of living has moved up dramatically over the past few years, probably 30 or 40%. And Americans, you know, were living paycheck to paycheck before that happened. And that's why you're seeing this surge in jobs, because so many people now have been forced to take second and third jobs. Moonlighting is at an all-time record high. That's also why you've seen credit card debt hitting record highs, even as credit card interest rates are at record highs, because Americans are borrowing and taking second and third jobs to pay their rent or to pay the utility bills or to put food on the table or pay for their insurance. The necessities of life have increased in price substantially, and it's going to continue. It's not going to stop. It's going to be relentless. And the reason that everything costs so much more is because the government is so much larger than it used to be, and therefore it's so much more expensive because the public has to support the government. And if the government isn't going to raise taxes, then it simply prints money and raises prices. Inflation is a tax. It's the way the government takes your purchasing power and transfers it to itself so it can give it to whoever is benefiting from the spending. And so it's really the tax burden that is skyrocketing, and especially since COVID, but even before COVID, the burden was going up, and now it's just really skyrocketed. And, you know, as more and more people in my generation leave the workforce and start collecting Social Security and Medicare, the burden is just going to be greater and greater on everybody else. And yeah, civil unrest is coming. And, you know, it could get even worse, because what I think is ultimately where we're headed is price controls. I think the government, they've already started blaming companies for the inflation. Companies are too greedy. They're jacking up their prices. You know, it's not fair. They're taking advantage of people. This is all a bunch of BS. The companies have no choice. Inflation is forcing prices higher. They would rather not raise their prices. In fact, they've dragged their feet. They've absorbed a lot of the increased costs, hoping that it was transitory. But, you know, they've had to, raise their prices to maintain their margins, to stay in business. Because if they go out of business, then, you know, there's nothing to buy because they're no longer selling. But I think the government is going to impose price controls as things really start to spiral. And then that takes a bad situation and makes it worse. So now it's not just that prices are higher. It's just you can't even buy the stuff because the goods are no longer available for sale because of the price controls. Or you can buy the stuff, but it's even more expensive because you got to buy it on the black market. The only place you can get it is from a criminal who's willing to break the law. And then the price is even higher because the premium is greater because he's risking going to jail selling you this stuff. Now, there will be some stuff available if you want to wait on a long line. If you don't want to wait on a long line, you could pay somebody to wait on it for you. But then it really makes the cost of goods go up. So, that, you know, there's no way that the government can stop it with these gimmicks, but they're under a lot of political pressure to do something, and they never want to accept responsibility for creating the inflation. They just want to look for scapegoats to blame it on. But, you know, that's going to create even more civil unrest. And, you know, in the culture that we have now, where everybody feels entitled to something, where people feel that they don't have to work, that they can sit home and get a welfare check or get, you know, food stamps, you know, through SNAP or housing vouchers or healthcare or free education. Once Americans accept that, right? And, you know, we used to be a nation of rugged individuals. You know, when welfare was first introduced during the Depression, a lot of people were too embarrassed to take it and they had too much pride to take it. And there were actually people who paid the money back. Like when they got jobs, they felt like they needed to pay it back. Like, you know, how I can't take something that I didn't earn, right? So Americans had a different a culture and a different sense of responsibility and personal dignity. But now, when people just expect that they're owed something simply because they're there, and you believe in that, well, theft is simply a way of cutting out the middleman, right? If I think that I'm entitled to free stuff and the government can take it from other people and give it to me, well, if I'm not getting what I believe I'm entitled to, why wait for the government to steal it for me? I'll just do it myself. I'll just go help myself to whatever's there. I mean, people will think that way. I mean, a lot of people will think, well, it's reparations. You know, why wait for the government? I'm just going to take what's mine. And so all this is coming. And so it's not not going to be pretty.
Yes, a lot of perverse incentives out there. And the sad thing is, the worse it gets, the more people will be clamoring for more government intervention, which is the sad part of it all. You know, a lot of market participants are watching the Fed's every move, trying to forecast what they're going to do next. Markets react to Powell's statements, sometimes almost instantaneously. You've got algorithms and high-frequency traders trading based on what Powell says in his speech and what the Fed's going to do. Will we ever have a market that is separated from the Fed's actions and from their words? Because it's insane when you hear somebody like Powell speak. He's saying multiple different things in the same sentence. Will this perversion continue until the dollar collapses? What's it going to take to go back to more of a free market system?
Yeah, I do think it's going to continue until we have a currency and a sovereign debt crisis. I mean, it shows you how ridiculous it is that so much depends on a few words spoken by Powell, or, you know, a couple of changes to a statement or a dot plot, and all of this determines, you know, whether we buy or sell. I mean, the Fed should just be irrelevant in the background. I remember once upon a time, nobody even knew who the Fed chairman was. I mean, a lot of people didn't even know what the Fed was. And now, you know, there may be more people who know the chairman of the Fed than know who the vice president is. And, you know, it's not supposed to be that way. But it's become a very political office. And everybody looks to the Fed to solve problems. You know, in fact, you had all these politicians. They think the Fed is there to solve the inequality, or, you know, they don't like the distribution of wealth. It's too highly concentrated, or there's too much unemployment in the African-American community. And they ask the Fed, what are you going to do about it? There are people asking the Fed what they're going to do about climate change. Like, well, what do they have? They have a printing press. All they can do is create inflation. You know, you can't solve the world's problems with inflation, but temporarily you can make it look like they went away because, you know, all the numbers go up. Everybody thinks they're rich, right? When you print a bunch of money and everybody thinks that now they're rich because they've got more money. But the problem is then prices go way up and you don't have more purchasing power. And we're at that stage right now. The prices are starting to catch up to the money.
I want to get your thoughts on silver here, because central banks are not stacking silver, but it has been performing quite strong, seeming to move in tandem with gold recently. What are the catalysts you see driving silver? I've heard some interesting comments, like the Indian retail market is a big reason for silver's move. I'm wondering what you're seeing in the silver market right now.
Yeah, I mean, silver was really bound to take off. It was near, 90 to 1 with gold, you know, record lows. Gold was marching higher, really from 2,000 to 2,200, 2,300-ish. And silver hadn't even moved. Silver was still below 25. And then all of a sudden, it spiked up to 30, pulled back a bit. But I think now silver has broken out and it's joined gold and will ultimately eclipse gold as far as the percentage gains, not the price. But I think, you know, percentage wise, I think that silver could hit $50 an ounce before gold hits 3,000. And so that's a much bigger gain for the price of silver than the price of gold. But again, I think the reason was the central banks. They weren't buying silver. They were just buying gold. They don't have room to store silver. And also the central banks aren't investing in the mining stocks. So, you know, it's the retail public and institutions that might have been investing, and they were not. Again, they don't understand it. They think that gold or silver should be going down because it's a soft landing. Everything is great. Buy the Magnificent Seven. And those who are worried, well, they were buying Bitcoin. I think that the launch of these Bitcoin ETFs really, you know, provided that smokescreen, because when everybody should have been talking about gold's rally, they were talking about these Bitcoin ETFs, which were the most successful ETFs as far as how much money went into them. They're not going to be successful from the point of view of the people who were dumb enough to buy them. It's going to be a complete failure. But Wall Street did, you know, sucker in a lot of speculators, so they're making money for now. in these ETFs. But I was actually watching during that first month or so we're trading, like there was one week where gold went sideways and gold stocks were down like 15%. And it was like, well, what's going on? And I thought, well, maybe people are selling off their gold stocks to buy the Bitcoin ETFs because the money had to come from somewhere. And in fact, all year, we've had record outflows out of GLD, which is the biggest gold ETF. At the same time, where gold prices are running up to record highs. And normally, it's the opposite. Normally, the retailers are chasing a rally. They're not selling into the rally. And so what that tells me is that they've got it wrong. This rally has legs. It has a long way to go. It's not going to be until we have huge inflows from the retail public that we're probably going to get a significant correction. Probably not even a bear market at this stage, but we could have a 5 or 10% correction if the public jumps in. But so far, they're still selling.
Well, I'd like to get your thoughts on the gold miners since you brought it up. You touched on Barrick and Newmont being undervalued before gold started to wake up. We have seen...
Well, they were downgraded. They were downgraded.
Yeah.
They've gone up like 50% since the downgrades, but nobody's upgraded them. There was one Wall Street firm, Bank of America, last week that upgraded Freeport-McMoRan to a buy, which is probably more copper than gold, but that's the first... buy I saw on a miner, but no one has upgraded any of the gold stocks from, where they were. I mean, if they had them as a buy, they're still to buy, but the people that were a neutral or a hold or an underweight, they haven't said anything. They haven't revised upward their forecasts and their ratings.
So I'm wondering if you see an opportunity in the gold stocks at the moment, maybe the majors, maybe the developers, maybe the explorers, depending on one's risk tolerance, I suppose. Obviously, they have woken up a bit. They have started to move now that gold is at all-time highs. Is there still an opportunity there for those who are maybe new to the gold mining space?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I think that these stocks are still incredibly cheap. You know, gold stocks have been the ironic victim of inflation. You would normally think, oh, high inflation, that's good for gold miners. The problem is the investors haven't really recognized how bad the inflation threat is, and they haven't bid up gold prices enough, but the cost of mining has gone up dramatically. Most gold companies are making less money today mining gold at, $2,400 than they were mining it at $500. Because of the increase in energy costs and labor costs. But what nobody seems to notice is that recently now, gold prices are outstripping the gains in a lot of other commodities. And the dollar has stayed firm, meaning the gold price in terms of other currencies has actually risen faster than it has in dollars. And most mining companies, their wages are in those other currencies. So the margins, I think, over the last few months have really improved rather remarkably in these gold stocks. And so I would be looking for that to be reflected in their earnings that come out. And maybe that'll be a catalyst or a wake-up call to Wall Street to buy these stocks. But before they get that wake-up call, while they're still sleeping, I would advise your listeners to be moving heavily into this segment, recognizing it is a risky segment. So, don't put money in there that you absolutely can't afford to lose. But if you do have risk capital, this is what risk capital is for, because the upside potential, I think, dwarfs the downside risk. I think it's a unique opportunity to make, stellar returns. You can do it yourself or you can hire me. In fact, I didn't even do it myself. I hired Adrian Day. You've had him on your program. Adrian manages the Europe Pacific Gold Fund. You can buy that no load at any discount brokerage firm. EPGIX, I believe, is the no load symbol. It's the institutional class of the Europe Pacific Gold Fund. I think Adrian has built an incredible portfolio. We've got some really good juniors in there that I think are going to be, the 50, 100 baggers of this bull market, but I think the seniors are still going to go up 10x, before this thing is over. But you can get a lot of exposure if you have larger portfolio, we have separately managed accounts at Europe Pacific Asset Management. You could visit me at europacfunds.com or europac.com, even shorter, and talk to our representatives there about us managing a portfolio for you in the mining space. You know, we do separately managed accounts. And of course, you know, don't overlook owning the physical metal. I mean, I think there's more upside potential in the miners right now, but of course, there's more risk there as well. But everybody should own some physical gold and silver, silver in particular right now. And you could get that from shiftgold.com. You know, that's my gold company, and I think we've got the best prices and the best service. You know, we've got personal service at discount prices, and we don't push people into numismatics or anything like that. We recognize that you're not buying gold to become a coin collector. I mean, if you're a coin collector, okay, that's totally different. I'm not knocking collecting coins or collecting art or anything else. But if you just want an inflation hedge, if you want to get out of fiat currency and have savings in metal, you don't need to become a coin collector. You just need to buy the most gold and silver you can for your money. And that's with bullion.
Great breakdown there, and agree, Adrian Day, one of the smartest individuals out there when it comes to the precious metal space. Always love picking his brain. Before I do let you go, let's finish on any other commodities you're currently watching at the moment. Are you watching the energy space? Copper, obviously a bit of a big story. Are there any other commodities outside of the gold and silver sector that you think present an opportunity right now?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I definitely watch the whole energy sector. Oil is a very important commodity, not only in the production of goods, but in the transportation of goods. Copper is also an important commodity to watch. It's used in a lot of key things that we need. And, you know, too, you've got the big move towards electric everything, and that takes a lot of copper. You know, people forget, okay, we're not going to use oil. All right, but where's it going to get the copper? Where are you going to get the nickel or some of these other minerals that need to be mined? But, you know, I'm looking at the agriculture complex. I mean, you've got certain key cocoa, coffee, I mean, things that have really exploded. But I'm looking for, you know, bigger moves in the grains when you start to see the wheat and the corn and the soybeans, because these are the ingredients that are really going to put a lot of pressure on grocery prices, even more so than we have. And then you look at, you know, other hogs and cattle and, you know, the meat, you know, because that's really going to bite, you know, when it's the food that ends up costing. Americans take food for granted, right? Because it's been so cheap for us on a relative basis. But when it starts eating into a bigger percentage of your paycheck, it becomes a big problem. And, you know, people initially respond by, you know, reducing the quality of their meals. And that doesn't even make it sometimes into the CPI the way they hedonically adjust it. It's like, oh, okay, well, you used to eat filet mignon, and now you're eating, you know, chopped meat. Well, you're still eating meat, so we'll say there's no inflation, right? Because you're just spending on hamburger what you used to spend on steak. Well, by that logic, if Americans have to eat dog food, they can say, well, that's fine because the dog food just costs what steak used to, and they're still eating, right? They got, you know, so it's like it misses the degradation in the standard of living and your quality of life. And people, you know, people just skip breakfast maybe, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, you don't need it. I do intermittent fasting myself, but I'm not doing it out of necessity. I'm doing it for health reasons. It's not that I can't afford to eat, but you know, I remember there was this one executive I saw interviewed on television, and he was really excited because I think it was Kellogg's, their earnings were going up because he said, yeah, people are eating cereal for dinner now. Right. Because that's all they can afford. So they could skip breakfast and then have their cereal at night instead of in the morning. It was like, you know, in the 1970s, when the heating costs were going up, Jimmy Carter said, well, just wear sweaters. Right. That's just going to be America. Right. We can't afford heat, so we wear sweaters. Right. We can't afford air conditioned. So well, I don't know. We just walk around in our bathing suits. But it's just, you know, Our standard of living as a nation is going down because the things we used to take for granted become too expensive to afford. And, you know, you could thank government. This is the government imposing this burden on the population in order to continue its reckless spending.
Well said, and I am so with you on the intermittent fasting, skipping breakfast. I think that's the best thing people can do for their health. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people doing it because they can no longer afford it, as you pointed out. You mentioned Euro-Pacific Asset Management. I'm definitely going to put a link to that in the description below. Before I let you go, tell us about the Peter Schiff Show, where people can find that.
Well, schiffradio.com and on my YouTube channel, the Schiff Report. I've recently kind of merged my social media, my podcasting with Sovereign Man. And so we've now become Sovereign Schiff. And, you know, soon you'll be able to get all the content on Sovereign Schiff, as well as sign up for our free daily newsletter, Notes from the Field, which I think is a great read. And just go to, it's not Sovereign Schiff, it's Schiff Sovereign. I mix them up. It's Schiff Sovereign, not Sovereign Schiff, Schiff Sovereign. So you go to schiffsovereign.com and sign up for that. But I do the podcast once or twice a week. I mean, on a rare occasion, you'll get three podcasts out of me. It just like depends on how much news there is that I think is really worthy of talking about and how much free time I have in my schedule to do it, or if I'm traveling, and it's always a little bit more difficult when I'm on the go. But, you know, I tend to tweet a lot, or not tweet, post a lot these days on X. I now have over 1 million followers there. So if you want to get my thoughts, follow me on X. But I'm also on Insta, Facebook, TikTok even. I mean, so I'm there. If you look for my content, you can follow me, subscribe, of course, to the YouTube channel, and spread the word. You know, tell your buddies and your coworkers, because there's so much fake news and misinformation out there from the mainstream, that if you really want to know what's going on, you gotta get your news from people like me. I mean, I'm not the only one out there telling it straight, but you know, you're not going to get that from the mainstream. I mean, they're entertainers or they're paid promoters, but they don't even understand the truth. And if they do, they're probably not allowed to speak it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I will put a link to the Peter Schiff Show, as well as Schiff Sovereign, did you say, .com?
Schiff Sovereign. Yeah, Schiff Sovereign.
Great. Okay, that'll be in the description below. Thank you so much once again, Peter, for coming on and sharing your knowledge with the audience.
Oh, Jesse, my pleasure. Always happy to be on your program. Keep up the good work.
Commodity Culture is a podcast that covers investing in commodities and natural resources. If you'd like to hear more, be sure to subscribe so you are always alerted of the latest episodes.